The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Great to be together. In a moment, we'll talk with John Schlafly. John Schlafly's got his weekly column. We'll see what he's up to. I saw an early draft of it, unless it changed dramatically. It is about things going on down in Texas. Texas. We'll see what John has to say and cover a lot more ground with him in just a few moments. Great to be with you. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Let me encourage you to go to ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com. Sign up for the daily email, the daily wink while you're there. And you'll get an email every day at 8 a.m. East Coast, 5 a.m. Pacific time. And it will give you an update, a couple of links, a couple of stories, a couple of things, and oftentimes a link to this here radio or broadcast, the opening of the Pro America Report, the What You Need to Know segment, the wink. That's how we get there. W-Y-N-K. All right. Today, a little different, a little different. I spent most of the day up on Capitol Hill. I have a lot of inside knowledge on the debt limit fight. I think it's darn imperfect, but I don't know. I think it's, to me, it's the whole thing is a bit of a setup. I don't think you're going to see a major change in this country by these people that are in charge now. I don't think you can expect it to happen. Therefore, are the Republicans getting a few things out of this? Maybe. Are the Democrats getting more spending? Sure. Is it a mess? Yeah. I just don't know how you do it better right now, to be honest. I know how you could do it worse, and I know it's bad. I just don't know how to do it better, and I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to talk to you about it. Instead, I want to talk to you about a policy. So, two observations. One, Donald Trump has been publishing these policy papers, policy videos for about 2 months now. And he did one the other day on birthright citizenship. I mentioned on the show, he said, look, when I'm president, I'm not going to wait for more policy arguments. I'm going to immediately ban if you have a baby on our soil, you get to be a citizen. He said, I think I can do that. It'll set up a legal fight, is my opinion, Ed Martin's opinion. But at least we'll have a discussion. At least we'll have the conversation, because there is literally an industry, literally, called DR to the ER. Dominican Republic to the emergency room in Newark, or in Chicago, Miami, I think is more likely. DR to the ER, Dominican Republic to fly into Miami, 8.5 months pregnant, complain of pain in your belly, and you're going to the ER, and you're going to have a baby, and the baby will be an American citizen. And then by chain migration, by the ability for a American citizen, even an infant, to get his parents in, you're going to get lots of people in the country. ER to the DR. It's a thing. Literally. I'm not making that up. And that's because of this stupid, stupid birthright citizenship, which nobody else has in the world. The idea that you visit America, have a baby, and the baby's a citizen is just silly. Nobody does. It doesn't happen in France, doesn't happen in Indonesia, doesn't happen in any country. I've lived in Italy, I've lived in Indonesia, I've lived in Malaysia, I've visited Hong Kong, I've been in all of the cities of Europe, Latin America, nowhere. It's the dumbest thing, especially when it's America. People want to come here, they come here. There's hotels in California for Chinese nationals to come when they're 6 months pregnant and stay, have a baby, and then have the baby a citizen. So he's going to change that. So that's all good policies, good policies. But recently he published a really spectacular video, Donald Trump did. And the reason I'm telling you about it is I do like it. And I like the fact that he was already doing this during his presidency. All that's true. It's an extension kind of the 1776 commission, which he started. And the idea was to highlight 1776 in contrast to the stupidity of people that are trying to pick another year to say that America was founded. I got no problem marking other years. 1619, interesting year. 1607, 1608, 1619, whatever. But the main celebratory framing, the way you have to understand our history is 1776. There's no other way to do it. And so people have to stop. Just to say, they have to stop the silliness and get confident. And that's what Trump is doing. And we have to be willing to embrace that. So what he announced in the last 24 hours is we're going to have a major birthday celebration, the 250th birthday of America. And we're going to start on Memorial Day of 2025 and go for a full year and 2 or 3 months to July 4th of 2026. Which will be the 250th anniversary of July 4th, 1776. And then he announced we're going to have games with young people playing sports. We're going to have the world's, what do you call it? The state fair of all state fairs. Every state will have exhibits. He's going to start kick it off in Iowa at the huge state fair there. If you've never been to the state fair, massive, massive, old fashioned Midwest, Middle America, country state fairgrounds that's, you know, huge, acres and acres, hundreds of acres, large, with all kinds of spaces. And he said, we're going to have tourism to America. We're going to celebrate America. And here's the thing. Here's what you need to know. We must, in this country, begin to celebrate what anchors us in our great history. It is not improper to wish that the founders were even better people. Got no problem with that, because I don't think of the founders as perfect people. But I do think that what they did and how they set up the country and their values and what they fought for and the vision that they had is singular in human history. There's only a few other times. And the other times, I think when I look at it, they're probably biblical moments. Moments that are wrapped in divinity, to be honest, and sort of grace-filled moments. But as, and I think the founding of America was too, but as to the celebration of starting on in 1775 to 1776, in other words, starting in 2025 to 2026, it's perfect. And we have to be willing to celebrate those days of dramatic vision for the future that these men and some women had to break from Britain and to build something special and ultimately to have a constitution and ultimately to be knitted together and ultimately to bring God in the form of the Judeo-Christian tradition, not a God, not a religion, but God and religion, faith. We are not a secular nation. You can be secular if you want, but we should not expect nor demand nor want our nation to be secular. And when Trump was talking in this thing about the celebration of the birthday, he talked about that he's going to ask faith leaders. He didn't say Christian leaders. He didn't say Judeo-Christian leaders. He said faith leaders to pray and to seek a revival. That's America. And we've got to get more confident. You know, when I was a kid, and I've told you this 1,000 times, that we did the Pledge of Allegiance, right? We did the stood up and did the Pledge of Allegiance. At every baseball game, we sang the national anthem. There was a lot more rote's the wrong word. There was a lot more regular efforts to highlight our patriotism. And if you want to call that brainwashing, I say, okay, but it's brainwashing in the right direction. It's trying to train ourselves and our kids. I guess I'd say this. It's a fine line between brainwashing and training. Because training our kids to be honest people, to believe in the Judeo-Christian values that knit us together, which is freedom, not Judaism or Christianity, but freedom and ethics and morality and the Constitution and the rule of law and righteousness and property rights. That's a celebration, an awesome celebration, a celebration that's a liberation. And there'll be so many examples of people and of events and of things and inventions and progress and failures and missed opportunities, all part of life, all part of the American life, all part of our national life, all part of who we are as a nation and what we want to be going forward. It's an awesome, awesome thing to have this vision that Trump has for the 250th birthday. I have to say, it excites me, you can tell, more than maybe it should. It excites me more than maybe it should, because we don't have anybody doing this. We're all on the defensive. We're all fighting about woke stuff. We're fighting about who's not nice and who's going to the Dodgers game, who's nasty. And they are, by the way. I hate that that's happening. And who's up and who's down and who's in and who's out and who's canceled, who's not. And America needs to be celebrated. Rip, roaring party, picnic, celebrated. That's what you need to know. It's worth it. It's worth it. All right. That's what you need to know. That's the wink. We'll take a break and come back and talk with John Schleifele in just a moment. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Time to catch up with John Schleifele. John Schleifele writes a weekly column. The column is called The Schleifele Report, funnily enough, and he writes it with his brother, Andy. Andy Schleifele and John Schleifele every week over at townhall.com is where it posts initially, and then it's archived at phyllisschleifele.com along with all of Andy's columns. All right. Now, John, the column... There's a million things going on in the swamp. We got a fight over the debt ceiling. We got MTG tweeting about the videos from January 6th. You are drawing our attention to what you call, it's a great headline, ambush impeachment in Texas stole from voters. All right, John, walk me through, because I don't think that the national coverage of this really, it makes it clear. It's kind of choppy, if anything. They basically say Republicans fighting amongst themselves. Walk us through what this is, what's happened here.
Well, there's been no national coverage, which is surprising. And what news is covering is, this breathless anticipation of whether or not United States is going to default is a lot of nonsense. There's no possibility the United States would default. And so I've turned off the regular TV channels. But what happened in Texas is nearly unprecedented. At least it hasn't happened in a century. And it's a complete and total outrage. I mean, Donald Trump tweeted about it. Ted Cruz spoke strongly about it. But almost every other conservative has been missing in action. So the Texas State House, on the day before they adjourned, voted to impeach Ken Paxton, the attorney general, who's done a terrific job. I mean, he's been the leader. I mean, his attorney general's office in Texas has brought more actions to call out the Biden administration for not following the law as anyone else. There's been some other good states, but Texas is clearly the leader. He has a great legal staff. And suddenly, out of nowhere, some unknown person came up with 20 charges of impeachment and rammed it through the state house after about an hour's debate. It's just an outrage, Ed.
John, and, but what is Texas, what is it for? I mean, I saw well, the coverage. For? What is it for?
I don't even know what it was for. It wasn't for, as far as I can tell, it wasn't for any misconduct in office. And under the Texas Constitution, the impeachment is enough to remove the state official. So Ken Paxton is immediately suspended from his office. Now, there's going to be a trial in the state Senate at some unknown future date, and if Ken Paxton survives that, he will be restored to his office. But that is uncertain. So it's different from the impeachment provided by the U.S. Constitution in that respect.
John, here's the question I have. It's did we break through a wall here and basically impeachment at every level, the national as well as the local level, is just a tool used against conservatives. It's not used against moderates and not used against Democrats. Otherwise, we would have had Mayorkas impeached or Biden impeached or something. So it's never used against Democrats, liberals, or moderate Republicans. But if you're conservative, and Ken Paxton is indisputably a conservative, it's used against them. But it's just a political, at this point, I guess, to your point and your column, it's just a political tool. They couldn't beat him at the ballot box. He won by hundreds of thousands of votes, right? I mean,
won by a wide margin, first over the George P. Bush in the primary, and then over some Democrat in the general election. He won by a wide margin, and he's doing a great job. Now, of course, there are some disputes and controversies. I mean, there always are. I mean, he's dealing with controversial issues, and he's got a tremendous portfolio of great cases that he's brought, always on the right side and always taking the strong action against the Biden administration. There hasn't been one thing that he's done inappropriately in the course of his office. And now this, and he has to step aside. And so the governor, I mean, Ken Paxton's assistant is temporarily running the office, which would be okay, but the governor can appoint someone else if he wants to. And now the lieutenant governor, who's Dan Patrick, presides over the state Senate and will be conducting the impeachment. Now, Dan Patrick has never conducted an impeachment before. And I mean, whether or not there's a fair trial, I think the odds are against there being a fair trial in the state Senate.
John, I do think Paxton's wife is a state senator, by the way. I think that's one thing at least helps him.
But they'll pressure her to recuse herself.
And
honestly, I don't really, you know, much as I like Ken Paxton, I really don't approve of spouses, both holding public offices at the same time. You see a lot of that.
Right.
I don't like it, but I mean, that's where we are. Whether or not Angela Paxton will be able to cast her vote, I mean, that remains to be seen. If she doesn't commit to recuse, they'll try to disqualify her.
John, we're talking with John Schlafly. His column again is over at phyllisschlafly.com. Ambush impeachment in Texas stole from the voters. Really was a setup, as you point out. It was the last day of the session, so that nobody knew it was coming. It was kind of thrown upon him, and as you point out, now it's out for a year. They only meet every other year in Texas, so sort of ends abruptly, and he's out. John, you in the column, you and Andy allude to the other issues, and I have to tell you, I had a conversation with a pro-life senior staffer in the last about 12 hours. And her comment to me was, one of the things that the left, Sheldon Whitehouse, the senator from Rhode Island, did during the Kavanaugh hearings, and every time something comes up, is he trots out these big placards and he talks about dark money on the right. And they never talk about dark money on the left, and there's plenty of it. I mean, I think we do when you say Soros and all, but there's a lot more dark money from places like Planned Parenthood. They get almost $700 million in tax dollars, and they have $1 billion endowment they're sitting on, all kinds of things like that. But you allude here to the fact that there's dark money moving in and out of the Texas situation, and that there's you allude to this sort of sense that there's other things going on here. We'll walk us through that. And how much do you feel like you're guessing on that as opposed to seeing that happening?
Well, there's a lot of dark money that funds Republicans, too. And, we really suspect that big money people who fund both parties have come from a different point of view than, those of us who backed Donald Trump, who funded his own campaign in 2016. People forget about that. And that's one of the reasons that drew public support to him. Now, of course, in 2020 and 2024, he's is receiving contributions. But the amount, everybody's heard about the Koch network, which involves hundreds and hundreds of big money donors, maybe 1,000, who are allied with the Koch brothers, or I guess there's one surviving brother. But then there are others too. And when you look at, first of all, the Texas State Republican Party, which were, when you look at Senator John Cornyn, well, basically, when you look at the Republicans who have been missing in action on the whole Paxton thing, other than Ted Cruz, no other nationally known Republican spoke up in defense of Ken Paxton or protesting the railroad that booted him from office last Saturday. And that tells you something. And I think that I think it's fair to surmise that a lot of money people decided it was time for Paxton to go, and they told their other beneficiaries to stand down on this. I mean, I don't think there's any other conclusion you can come to. And, you know, we also cited there's this movement that is passing under the radar pretty much called the Convention of States, which is an effort to call a convention that would propose changes to our United States Constitution. And that's funded by big money people. And they got Texas to pass that a couple years ago. Governor Abbott did. But it did. He did have to accept a 8-year time limit on it so that it would expire after 8 years. And so they were on the verge of getting a resolution passed in this legislature that would add another 8 years to it. And they did pass that in the state house. And it was only through a fluke that somehow, nobody is quite sure how, somehow that got buried on the last day of the session. As you mentioned a moment ago, Texas legislature meets only for 140 days every other year. And this is the year. So they're now out of session now from now until 2025.
We're talking with John Schlafly again. His column is over at phyllisschlafly.com. It's archived there. He and his brother Andy write the weekly column, The Schlafly Report. John, may I slide into a broader conversation now? Again, you are a keen observer in your many years at the right hand of the late Phyllis Schlafly and involved in politics of presidential campaigns back through. I think you tell stories about printing and being part of the Choice Not an Echo in 1964 all the way down through today. This primary, it doesn't feel, the Republican primary, it doesn't feel like it's very close, which is to say, I don't see anything that makes me think that it's anything but a runaway for President Trump, but it is getting unpleasant. Is this the new normal in a world of social media and you know, the media wanting people to pick each other apart? Does this remind you of 1980 when Reagan and Bush were going at it hammer and tongs, or what do you feel? I'm not enjoying it. Let me say it that way.
No, I agree with you, Ed. I think one factor is cable news. Now, of course, Fox News, as we all know, has lost a big slice of its viewership after the disastrous actions of that they committed in April, firing Tucker and making that outrageously bad settlement. But still, they do have a lot of viewers. I mean, there's some overlap, Ed, I suspect, between Fox's viewers and your listeners,
right?
Whether you like it or not, and let's face it, Fox is fomenting the battle in the Republican presidential primary because it's ratings for them. I mean, it's just a matter of money. So they're giving inordinate, exhaustive attention to every possible, you know, person who is or may even be thinking about running for president next year. I mean, everyone from Asa Hutchinson to now they're saying that Mike Pence is going to
Sununu might run I mean, yeah,
this is just, you know, is Fox trying to build viewership, pretending that there's a fight that people need to watch, when in reality, as you say, there really isn't any fight. Trump has got this going away. And there really isn't anything. I don't have any concern about that. It's as good as done. Trump is the nominee because to most Republicans, including me, basically, Trump is the president. I mean, he is our president. He was cheated out of it last time. And as far as I'm concerned, he is coming to collect what he really, what's due him now.
John, it's I think that's all true. But if you go back and read A Choice, Not an Echo by your late mother, the kingmakers find lots of ways to mess things up. And I think you basically you just said that. I mean, right. That's the game right now. Right.
And if I can quote a sentence from A Choice, Not an Echo, she wrote in 1964, she said, the kingmakers are very resourceful. And that's true. They've always got a plan B or plan C or a candidate waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
In 64, it was, you know, William Scranton, if anybody remembers that.
Wow. Yeah.
Somebody. So, you know, they'll make a stand for it. They'll make a last stand. Mm. So we've got to be prepared for that. And I don't know if it's going to be Nunu or Chris Christie or, you know, they've all, it's hard to believe that any of them would break into double digits, let alone challenge Trump. But this is where we are, and you've got, it's true, we've got to be on guard against, against, you know, the people who think they can be a giant slayer, who think they can somehow, you know, what they're all counting for, Ed, and let's, to be blunt about it, they are, every one of them is expecting to dance on Trump's grave. Something will happen to Trump. He may, you know, he may have a serious health problem or even die. He may be indicted by the special counsel, Jack Smith. You know, he may be on trial. He may even be convicted of something. And all of these other people are counting on that because that's what the media says. And they're saying, okay, fine, you know, Trump will be out of the way for one or several of these reasons, and then the Republicans will be looking for a clean candidate, and then they'll look to me. And every one of these people thinks that they are the one. You know, that's why they're running. They think, each one of them thinks he is the one or she.
I was just going to say thank you for correcting yourself there. John, is the what about this one? I'm looking at my notes because I wanted to ask you this. I wanted to have it on record. Henry Kissinger celebrated his 100th birthday this week, and he got the typical treatment in the press, even in Europe. A bunch of the European EU stalwarts, one of the commissioners of something or other, there's like a million of them, was saying how he's an inspiration. What are your thoughts on the birthday of Henry Kissinger?
Well, look, I applaud anyone who would reach the age of 100. To start with that. I mean,
okay,
that's the cost for blowing out 100 candles and celebrating. And even if it's Henry Kissinger. And, you know, to be fair, of course, Kissinger has had many, many controversies over his long career. And he's not all bad, frankly. I know Phyllis Schlafly wrote a whole book castigating Henry Kissinger for what she thought was his weakness in the Cold War against the Soviet Union, and his belief that since the United States could not possibly win the Cold War against the Soviet Union, that our national goal should be to seek a satisfactory second place with the Soviet Union. Now, that, and she went to, I believe, over 700 pages outlining her analysis of Henry Kissinger's view then. Now, of course, hardly anyone is alive who still remembers any of that controversy. And more recently, I think Henry Kissinger has aligned with what some people call the realist school of foreign policy, including, you know, not being all in for the new war against Russia over Ukraine. And I think he's had some wise comments about that, to be honest.
Hmm.
So we take these issues as they come. And
Happy birthday to Henry Kissinger. There you go. All right, John. That was very very
happy birthday to Henry.
Very diplomatic. Let me finish. Very diplomatic, John. Very diplomatic with a hat tip to Henry Kissinger.
Although, of course, Henry Kissinger, you know, he was right there with bringing China into
exactly
the world order.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's got a lot to answer for on
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Went over to China and toasted Mao Zedong and Zhou Enlai, and of course. I doubt that he foresaw what China has become today, but this is what China has become today. And Kissinger had a role in that. So let's not forget that.
Well, I didn't forget it, but you were the one that going soft on Kissinger. China, he screwed up Vietnam. I think he was the kind of advisor to presidents and preyed on their weaknesses, and therefore he was far more dominant and domineering than he should have been if he was serving as opposed to leading from where he was. But we'll have to leave it there, John. John Schlafly, everybody. Thank you, John. The column is up over at phyllisschlafly.com. Check it out there. And as always, appreciate John Schlafly's insight. We will take a break and be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily broadcast from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. And we're upholding the legacy of Phyllis Schlafly, grassroots activist, author of 27 books, and articulate voice for traditional values for more than 70 years. And now, from the archives of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, here is Phyllis Schlafly.
Sending little children to preschool has become very popular in recent years. The Department of Education estimates that back in 1965, only 5% of 3-year-olds and 16% of 4-year-olds attended preschool. By the year 2000, 42% of 3-year-olds and 68% of 4-year-olds were enrolled in some kind of preschool. These percentages have continued to rise, and dozens of politicians are convinced that endorsing what is now called pre-K, meaning pre-kindergarten, will be a plus in their political campaign. However, the data on educational benefits of pre-K show no significant gain. Performance on national tests and graduation rates have not improved, and in some cases have gotten worse. There's also evidence that greater enrollment in preschool could lead to some adverse outcomes, such as problem behaviors. One study at Stanford University and the University of California, Berkeley, concluded that kindergartners who attended more than 15 hours of preschool a week were more likely to exhibit aggressive behavior in kindergarten. There is evidence to suggest that there is a link between the amount of time young children spend outside of their parents' care and behavioral problems. The more time children spend in non-maternal care during the first 4.5 years of life, the more problems and conflicts with adults they manifest, according to reports from mothers, caregivers, and teachers. More time in non-maternal daycare results in problem behaviors such as too much assertiveness, disobedience, and aggression. The evidence simply does not support the optimistic claims of universal preschool proponents. Despite the real research, enormous amounts of federal and state taxpayers' money are going into pre-K.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. The traditional family is the building block of our communities and country. That's why it's imperative to support strong marriages, respect fathers, and champion stay-at-home moms. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, we oppose the liberal attempt to redefine the family. To join us, visit PhyllisSchlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Hey, tuning in, maybe a little bit late. It's not too late yet, but I have to tell you, with the help of my children, I tried this ChatGPT thing. Actually, that's not fair. I tried it without my kids. I don't mean to make it sound like I needed them. I put it on my phone. I didn't know I was on the cutting edge. The other day, I loaded the app on my phone for ChatGPT, and my son said to me, "What are you doing?" I said, "ChatGPT on my phone." And he said, "That app is brand new." I didn't know that. I guess I just happened to look at it that day, and it was brand new. But anyway, I found that really fun. And then I also got it on my laptop. And so I've been messing around. It's pretty cool. I don't know what to think of it. I don't think it seems like artificial intelligence. It seems like a really sophisticated search engine, a really sophisticated search engine that gives you more than that, I guess. So because what I did was I actually said, create a journal entries, and specifically around the events of January 6th, as if you were Nancy Pelosi. Okay. So that it just created this. It created, in fact, I think I put the dates on. I said between January 6th, 2021 and July 4th, 2021, create a series of journal entries, something like this, in the voice of Nancy Pelosi about her experience. And then lo and behold, and I said only 1,000 words or less per journal entry. And so it went about creating these. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool because it did have the hysterical language of Nancy Pelosi. I don't know if it sounded like her, like if it sounded like her writing or sounded like her speeches, but I think that's what the chat GPT does, is goes out and surveys, you know, all of her writings or a bunch of her writings. And it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I also said on the radio show a few weeks ago, a few months ago initially, and I think I followed up a few weeks ago, I had asked Naomi Wolf during an interview a follow-up question about what she does, or is she worried about losing her access to her online records and digital records, like her, and she went into this little short riff, maybe 30 seconds. But I circled back to her and I told her another time I was going to ask her more. And my question was this, and this is what I put into my search. It said prompt. What prompt? And my prompt was this: what are the steps I must take to change my bank statements from electronic to paper? And so that gave me like 10 steps. And then I said, then I wrote, what are the most important documents that I should have in paper form? And then it gave me a list. And my thought was, this is the think conversation Naomi Wolf and I were having, which is, if you lost all access to the cloud, all access to your digital records, how would you prove who you are? Not who you are, that too, but you could do that with your driver's license or say your passport. But how would you actually go about saying, hey, my bank account with X bank has $16,422, because you can't log in. If you can't log in, if say all the systems crashed and you couldn't log in, you couldn't use your, you know, face ID, you couldn't use your password, you couldn't get online. Well, if you had a paper copy and it was dated up to date, you could say, here's my paper copy. And I show it to someone, and I think that would work. But anyway, that was the thing. So I did that on ChatGPT. It gave me great answers. It gave me a list on the first part of that a prompt. It gave me 7 steps. On the second part, it gave me 6 steps. And it's pretty good. Pretty good. Let's see. What are the other one I did? I guess that's the only ones I did. I did a question on Al Haig. When did Al Haig say he was in charge of the White House? And it went through that thing, which is on the day of the assassination attempt on President Reagan, there was a press conference right away. And Al Haig, who was the Secretary of State, said, as of now, I'm in control here in the White House pending the return of the vice president, and got a ton of attention. It's always cited today. Whenever someone is missing, someone will say, hey, the so-and-so is missing. And they'll say, well, I'm in charge. I'm in charge. I'm like Al Haig was. So anyway, my point here is ChatGPT, it seems like supercharged search engine. I guess that's smart. I guess it's got some intelligence that it goes out and can write in Nancy Pelosi's voice, sort of, and it can make these lists. I just don't know how much thinking that is. It's, again, it's kind of a super a super search engine that was triggered by my prompt, by my search. My search terms were specific. Now that's one of the things it's, remember way back there was like Boolean. There was, you know, there was lots of ways you could do, algebra, Boolean algebra and Boolean logic. And you had to, they would do Boolean search terms. I remember that. And so they were the key, I think, was the conjunctions that would add things and then subtract things so that you could limit searches. Well, that's effectively, you don't have to be clever or you don't have to be as sophisticated in your search terms like Boolean search terms when you use ChatGPT, but you're basically going to have to know how to be a prompt. You're going to have to know how to be a super prompt writer, meaning a super prompt, which is a glorified, sophisticated search term phrase or sentence. You're gonna have to be good at that. You have to be better at that than other people. I think that's what it is. Anyway, but it is kind of interesting and it is kind of fun. And according to my kids, people are doing essays on tests and other things on AI. And then the teachers have ways to check if you've used AI, and it goes back and forth. It's kind of like an arms race, you know, a digital arms race to try to see who can get the upper hand. So there you have it. All right. Thank you, as always, to the great Noah Dingley and to Ryan Height, our producers, and also to you, the listeners. We will be back tomorrow. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Talk to you then.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.